Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
This bill, for the first time in 30 years, allows for the taxpayer funding of abortions.
When Christians say, I'm not going to get involved in those things, what we've done, we have now not only abdicated responsibility, but we have absolutely given confirmation to the utter destruction of everything we're afraid to touch.
Today we are celebrating the birth of our Prophet Muhammad, who was born on this day. It's a great day of the Muslim world. The Prophet gave us this religion, which is a religion of peace.
It's true that he was a violent man. In fact, he was, if you will say, the first Muslim terrorist.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love Issues, etc.
It is truly remarkable that we are seriously talking about suicide or assisted suicide, which looks an awful lot like consensual murder, as medical treatment, legitimate medical treatment. And yet in some states, in the United States, we are, and elsewhere, the conversation still continues as well. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., live this Tuesday afternoon, March the 9th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Reader Marker here in the first few minutes of this hour about several issues surrounding physician-assisted suicide, assisted suicide, and euthanasia, beginning with the indictment of some assisted suicide workers in Georgia. And, of course, what they're doing is legal elsewhere in the world and perhaps even in the United States. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943. Talkback at issuesetc.org is our in-studio email address, or you can Twitter us at issuesetc. After we talk with Rita Marker, we'll talk about the Church of Scientology with Karen Presley, a former Scientologist, and then Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse will join us to talk about some proposed divorce legislation in Oklahoma. They're trying to curtail their out-of-control divorce rate there in that state. Rita Marker is director of the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, based in Steubenville, Ohio. Rita, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. Good to be back.
The headline reads, Grand Jury Indicts Assisted Suicide Network Accused of Aiding Dozens of Deaths. How is this incident, these criminal activities, any different from what is being done legally in states like Washington and Oregon?
Well, it's being done in states where it is not legal. That's the big difference. In Washington and in Oregon, if a doctor prescribes an intentional overdose of drugs to give to a patient for the purpose of committing suicide, that's called a medical treatment. That is not called a medical treatment in Georgia or in Ohio or in other states. So that's one big difference. The other one is that in Washington and Oregon, the technicality at this point is that a doctor would have to provide the means for suicide. So the doctor assists, although people from the assisted suicide advocacy group Compassion and Choices, the one formerly known as the Hemlock Society, are the ones that really facilitate. In fact, according to the latest official report, if we can believe the statistics, in Oregon, of the 59 deaths that occurred that were reported in Oregon last year, Compassion and Choices was involved in 57, so they helped facilitate those deaths. After the patient got the prescription, they may have been present, may have brought the glass of water, may have handed the pills to somebody, may even have mixed them in their food. But that's Oregon and Washington, and that's not Georgia or the other states. In these particular cases, the ones who have been indicted in Georgia, four people, they work with a group called Final Exit Network. Now, that's a spinoff of Hemlock as well. Compassion and Choices is the name that Hemlock evolved into. And some of the folks in that group decided, well, you know, the whole purpose when they first started it, and really the purpose of the assisted suicide movement, is for assisted suicide to be available to anyone for any reason that they would want it. And so Final Exit Network says, well, they'll help anybody who has a terminal illness or is seriously ill, believes that, you know, that this is what they should do. And so they don't use the deadly overdose of drugs, even though one of the people indicted was a doctor. He's a doctor, by the way, who's 82 years old. I've met him. I've talked with him. His name is Larry Egbert, 82 years old, an anesthesiologist, who told me once that you know, people just consider him a saint for the help that he gives. Now, that help entails letting people know that they can order a plastic bag called an exit bag. And then that comes with the tubing along with it so that you can hook that up to a helium canister. Then you put that plastic bag over your head and turn on the helium canister, or maybe somebody else turns it on. Who knows? Because the person who dies, of course, is dead, and so we don't know who actually turned it on. Then after that's done, these folks from the Final Exit Network have in the past removed all of the contraptions, the helium canister, the plastic bag, and so forth. And it's very difficult to detect the helium. The only way that these folks got tracked down was because there was an undercover sting where a member of the Georgia Bureau of Investigation posed as a potential client or patient or whatever word you want to use. Then a family came out of the woodwork saying that one of their family members, who had had cancer, but the cancer was no longer there. He was going through some surgery to reconstruct his, because it was mouth and throat cancer, to reconstruct his face, and that he wanted this, and he ended up dead. Now, he wasn't terminally ill. He was, you know, going through the aftermath of having the reconstructive surgery. So that's kind of the difference between the two. In Washington and Oregon, it's considered just another medical treatment. In other states, it's considered a crime.
So what is expected to happen here? The defense attorney, of course, says that his clients will be exonerated.
Well, what is expected to happen here is that you will have very, very sympathetic-looking defendants, because all of these people are in their 70s and 80s. And so they are going to, you know, you'll have the white-haired lady, and you'll have Larry Egbert, the doctor, who actually looks like kind of a miniature Santa Claus with a twinkle in his eye. He's the type of person you'd want to sit down and have a cup of coffee with. You just don't want him putting a helium canister hooked up to a plastic bag over your head. So they will be very sympathetic defendants. Then they will talk about excruciating pain, which didn't seem to be the case here, but they'll talk about it anyway. They will pull at the heartstrings, and they will work to do what is called jury nullification. Now, while a jury is to follow the law, sometimes juries don't. They say, okay, that was the law, but we're not going to follow it. They don't say it in so many words. So it's possible that they'll be convicted. It's possible that they will be exonerated. When you're talking about any court case, no matter what case it is, you never know what the outcome will be.
Let's talk about this petition drive to permit assisted suicide of the elderly in the Netherlands. Of course, the Netherlands is always on the cutting edge of these kinds of things. What is this about, Rita?
Okay. First of all, it isn't assisted suicide. There's a difference between assisted suicide and euthanasia. And the Dutch, who have had a great deal of experience with this, don't really cotton too much to the idea of assisted suicide, where the patient ends up doing the last act. They say it is much more efficient and lends itself much less to potential bad side effects like convulsions and the patient ending up still alive in a worse situation than before. So they do euthanasia by lethal injection. In the Netherlands, the so-called guideline for euthanasia, death by lethal injection, is that the patient would be suffering unbearably. It never has required terminal illness. But now the question is, well, if you are old and you're tired of living, are you suffering unbearably? And so the Dutch, who are taking up these petitions, and there are many members of the Dutch euthanasia groups, and there are many other clueless people in the Netherlands who say, well, gee, if they want it, because the Dutch are, if nothing else, very tolerant of just about anything, they are saying, okay, well, if this is what a person wants, they should be able to get it. And so the petition is to clearly add to the acceptable reasons for euthanasia, the idea of being tired of living.
Okay. Is that a step forward, or is that something that's already being practiced but simply not legally?
It has been already practiced, and as far as not being legal, the only time that anybody is prosecuted is if the prosecutor decides to go forward with it, and the doctor could always say, well, they were suffering unbearably because They were dependent on others. They really found their situation to be totally unbearable. So because the requirement of unbearable suffering is so broad and also does encompass mental suffering, it's really being done anyway, but this will make it even more wide open so that people would be able to say, well, you know, I want to have a going away party. We are going to celebrate our 50th wedding anniversary today, and tomorrow we're going to go together, meaning die together.
Is this an extreme case, or the groups that we talked about just a moment ago in the U.S. who push for both assisted suicide and euthanasia, do they have the Netherlands in mind as a kind of a goal philosophically and morally?
Well, I don't think they're saying the Netherlands in mind, but they do have a goal, and the basis on which they put all of their arguments happens to be two specific reasons. The first is autonomy, the right of a person to decide when, where, why, and how to die, and the other is elimination of suffering. And that's always, you'll find those two arguments always, the basis of patient autonomy and elimination of suffering. Now, if you take those two things and then you say, okay, well, what about the laws in Oregon and Washington? Well, those laws say, although they're not necessarily followed, but they say the person is supposed to have been diagnosed with a six-month life expectancy, must be a competent adult. Now, if you have autonomy, the right to decide when, where, and how to die, why would you only have autonomy if it's bestowed on you by a doctor's diagnosis or misdiagnosis? It's totally illogical. And if the purpose is elimination of suffering and you're transforming assisted suicide into a good medical treatment, why would you deny that good medical treatment to, for example, a 16-year-old who is suffering or terminally ill? Why would you deny it to someone who is now incompetent and is terminally ill? It doesn't make any sense. It is totally illogical when you use their own arguments and then look at their supposed safeguards. The only reason for those supposed, and I continue to stress the word supposed, safeguards happens to be because that's all that the public would be able to swallow at this particular time.
Well, let's take a break right there, and when we come back, but if the logic is followed completely to its end, how does it look under the logic, it's now the deadly logic of assisted suicide, euthanasia, physician-assisted suicide? Do any of the safeguards continue? Do any of them survive if the logic of assisted suicide is allowed to persist? Rita Marker is our guest. We'll be right back.
Greetings from your friends at Zion Lutheran Church, Muskuta, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues, Etc. Zion Lutheran is a welcoming, family-friendly church that's firmly grounded on the unchanging truth of God's Word. We receive God's gifts of grace in a timeless, reverent way each Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. Zion Lutheran is located at 101 South Railway in Muskuta, Illinois. Zion Lutheran is a church home that's both faithful and friendly, and you'll be warmly welcomed. For more information, call 618-566-7345.
How are sinners declared righteous before a holy God? Where can we find the presence of God today? How can I discover God's will for my daily life? You'll find answers to these questions in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, The Spirituality of the Cross. Check it out at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase The Spirituality of the Cross by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. The Spirituality of the Cross by Dr. Gene Edward Veith.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues, Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues, Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Have you heard of the CLCC? In Hosea 4, we see, "My people are destroyed by lack of knowledge." The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission can help educate Lutherans on being Lutheran. We treasure our Lutheran beliefs and think that all Lutherans would if they learn what we believe, teach, and confess. So visit our website, www.theclcc.org. Check out what we have to offer. Get on our mailing list, or better yet, join us. And maybe encourage your pastor to hold a seminar in your area. Just go to theclcc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Tuesday afternoon, March the 9th. A few more minutes with Rita Marker of the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. Then Karen Presley will join us. She's a former Scientologist. We'll talk about the Church of Scientology, a big story about not a defector from Scientology, but a defector from one of its top organizations called the Sea Organization, or Sea Org, S-E-A Org. In the news, we'll see what Karen Presley has to say about leaving Scientology and this organization, a rather elite leadership organization in the elite religion that is Scientology. After that, Jennifer Roback Morris will join us. We'll talk about Oklahoma legislation to curtail divorce, the trying to deal with it on the front end, that is, before people get married. Rita, before the break, you were talking about the alleged safeguards in the method of assisted suicide and euthanasia. But if the logic behind it, personal autonomy, is followed, do any of those safeguards survive?
When you take the logic underlying their proposals and underlying their reasons for promoting and passing laws related to assisted suicide, you take it not to its illogical, but its logical conclusion. If it is good medical treatment to have assisted suicide based on autonomy, then it should be available to anyone because of personal autonomy. If you say it is a good medical treatment to end suffering, then certainly no one should be denied that good medical treatment that ends suffering. And so inevitably, their now laws in Washington and Oregon lend themselves to being interpreted, and I'm not saying they would even have to pass new laws, but being interpreted by a court as saying, well, of course it applies to other people. It's much like in Montana. On New Year's Eve, the Montana Supreme Court ruled that, in fact, in Montana, that it is no different if a doctor follows a patient's wishes to remove life support than if that doctor is to give the patient a prescription for a lethal dose of drugs. They say it's just part of the end-of-life continuum. So this is what we're seeing happening, and yet many people are really unaware of this. Many people are unaware that the trajectory that we're on right now is such that not too many years from now, I would imagine probably 5, maybe 10, that they might have a teenage child who said that their friend is not going to be playing at the game today because this is the day that they've grandfather has scheduled to die, and they all want to be present. This will be just one more medical treatment, one more sort of thing that's done and scheduled and accepted.
Finally then, and you mentioned this briefly before, Washington and Oregon have recently issued reports about assisted suicide in those two states. What can we learn from these reports?
Well, not a heck of a lot, that's for sure. What we get are some statistics. We're getting some numbers. Those numbers are based on information provided to the state in Washington and the state in Oregon by the very doctors that are prescribing assisted suicide. Those doctors are submitting the numbers and saying everything worked just really well, no problems, no abuses, all the guidelines were followed. And there's no way for the state to check and see if that information is accurate. In fact, the state of Oregon, in its first official report, said very specifically, we have no way of knowing if the information is accurate or complete. Some of the other things that one would look at, and again, this is just according to the report, according to this latest Oregon report, not one of the 59 people that are reported to have died under Oregon's assisted suicide last year, not one was referred for any psychological or psychiatric evaluation. One of the things that assisted suicide advocates point to is to say, look, all these people, or all but one, had health insurance, implying that the person who ended up dead really wanted this, even though they had access to other treatment and care. But that's not necessarily the case. Most people, I think, by now have heard of Barbara Wagner, the woman in Oregon who, year before last, who had been in remission from her cancer, went back to the doctor, and her doctor told her the cancer had returned. And then He said, but there is a drug I can prescribe that will extend your life and make you more comfortable. That drug was called Tarceva, and it would cost $4,000 a month, which really isn't much when you think about it. You know, you spend 2 days in the hospital, and it's $4,000. So Barbara Wagner felt really good about it because she had medical coverage through the Oregon Health Plan. But a few days later, she got a letter from the Oregon Health Plan explaining that it wouldn't pay for that, but that it would pay for assisted suicide. But she had health insurance. So when we see in those reports that the people had health insurance, we don't know if their health insurance plan said, well, no, we aren't going to pay for the care that you want and need, but we will pay for assisted suicide drugs.
With only about 20 seconds, that seems a very sinister policy, although perhaps unintentionally, because it seems it would always be cheaper to give one dose of lethal drugs than many of a very expensive life extended.
Well, hey, dead people don't cost money. And if we want to look at how this is already being viewed, the day after the Washington report came out, the Daily Evergreen, which is the official publication at Washington State University, came out with an article that talked about 1 year of assisted suicide, although they called it death with dignity in Washington, and said that it had saved a great deal of money for families, and it really kept people from going in debt. The reality is there is this force of economic gravity. When you have something that's really inexpensive, like giving people a deadly overdose, people begin to recognize that, wow, this is going to save money.
Rita Marker is director of the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide based in Steubenville, Ohio. You can stay informed on end-of-life issues by visiting the website for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide. You'll find a link at issuesetc.org. Thank you, Rita.
You're very welcome.